Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 1. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Anashritya Kara Palam Karyam Karma Karotiya Sasanyasi Triyogita Naniyagnirna Chakriya. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, the Lord said, Anashritya, without taking shelter, Karapalam, the result of work, Karyam, obligatory, Karma, work, Karoti, performs, Ya, one who, Sa, he, Sannyasi, in the renounced order. Cha, also, Yogi, mystic. Cha, also, Na, not. Ni, without. Agni, fire. Na, nor. Cha, also. Akriya, without duty. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, that he who lights no fire and performs no duty. Purport. In this chapter, the Lord explains that the process of eightfold yoga system is a means to control the mind and senses. However, this is very difficult for people to perform, in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the eightfold yoga system is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of karma yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. Everyone acts in this world to maintain his family and their paraphernalia. But no one is working without some self-interest, some personal gratification, be it concentrated or extended. The criteria of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness and not with a view to enjoying the fruits of work. To act in Krishna consciousness is the duty of every living entity because all are constitutionally parts and parcels of the Supreme. Part of the body works for the satisfaction of the whole body. The limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. Similarly, the living entity who acts for satisfaction of the Supreme Whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. The sannyasis sometimes artificially think that they have become liberated from all material duties, and therefore they cease to perform Agnihotra yagyas, fire sacrifices. But actually they are self-interested because their goal is to become one with the impersonal Brahman. Such a desire is greater than any material desire, but is not without self-interest. Similarly, the mystic yogi who practices the yoga system with half-open eyes, ceasing all material activities, desires some satisfaction for his personal self. A person acting in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the whole without self-interest works for the satisfaction of the whole without self-interest. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for self-satisfaction. His criteria of success is the satisfaction of Krishna. Thus he is a perfect sannyasi or perfect yogi. Lord Chaitanya, the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation, prays in this way. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vajagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shure bhavatad bhaktir ahai tu kitvayi. Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth or to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. What I want only is the causeless mercy of your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Shri Bhagavan Vacha, Nashitya Karapalam, Karyam Karma Karotiya, Sanyasita Yogita Niniragnirna Chakriya. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, that he who lights no fire and performs no duty. Just to clarify a few points here, Prabhupada mentions many times that we shouldn't act for our self-interest. We shouldn't act for our self-satisfaction. Does that mean we should act against our self-interest? We shouldn't act to become happy. We should act in such a way as to become unsatisfied. No, what Prabhupada is talking about is the basic philosophy, yata tara mula nishechanena triptyanti tatskanu bujo pushaka pranaharatscha yatendriyanam tataiva sarvahanam atuteja. That is, if you water the root of the tree, then the water goes to all the leaves and branches. If you supply food to the stomach, then naturally all the different parts of the body are served. If you serve Krishna, then all the demigods and everyone else are satisfied and served. But if you water each leaf of the tree, then there's no purpose. Nothing is really served by watering the leaf. So similarly, when we try to satisfy our individual senses, nothing is really served by that. Because the living entity, ourselves, the spirit souls, were not meant for self-enjoyment in any way. We enjoy when we experience Krishna's enjoyment. Now Krishna is absolute, he's unlimitedly blissful, so it's not a bad deal. We give a little love and we get unlimited love in return. So that's a good deal. It's not that we don't get any happiness. We get unlimited happiness. Now we don't get any happiness because we're trying to serve our senses just like the finger trying to eat the food. Now the finger may make a very strong attempt. It may do yoga exercises to become strong so it can eat more. But the finger is not supposed to eat food. It's supposed to give the food to the stomach and then it enjoys when the stomach enjoys. So similarly, when we work to satisfy Krishna and we experience Krishna's happiness, then we get unlimited happiness. And that's spiritual. If we expect ourselves to exist as the enjoyer and that everyone is supposed to love us, it's not practical because no one can even see us. Since no one can see us, it's very hard for anyone to actually love us. They could try to love our body, but anyone who tries to gratify our senses, or we try to gratify someone else's senses, then what we're really just trying to gratify is lust, or anger, or greed, or some corollary, people's madness, or illusion. But people can't be satisfied that way. We can temporarily satisfy someone's lust, but the next moment they'll become lusty again, and even more dissatisfied. So there's no permanent way we can satisfy anyone. You can work the whole lifetime to try to gratify someone's senses, and at the end of life, they'll still be unsatisfied. Like the example is given of, what was his name? Who was, Yayati, he was a king, and he met this lady, what was her name? Devayani and Sharmista. So Sharmista was, and Devayani were both friends. Sharmista, I believe, was the Kshatriya, and Devayani was the Brahmin. Is that right? Yeah, and Devayani was the daughter of Sukracharya. So Sukracharya, a very powerful personality, in charge of the Venus planet, Shukra planet, in charge of most of the material enjoyment, some material enjoyment in the universe. Venus, the god of love. And his daughter and Devayani were friends, and Sarmista were friends. And they play together. Samyukta was the daughter of Yayati? Or who was the actual king? Who was, sir, what's that? That doesn't sound right. No. Who was the one who was cursed? Oh, okay. She
was the daughter. Samyukta was the daughter of Vrishabhava.
And who is the king who found her in the well? Who found Devayani in the well? Yayati, okay. So they were both friends. One was a daughter of a Kshatriya, and the other was the daughter of a great Brahmin. And one day they were bathing, and their clothes got mixed up, and Sarvamista Devayani put on the clothes of Sarvamista, and she became angry, and threw in a well. So obviously people had strong emotions back then also. And that wasn't a very good idea, throwing the daughter of Sukracharya into a well. In any case, she was naked. She took off her clothes, I guess Sarvamista took off Devayani's clothes and threw her into a well for daring to put on her clothes. Then Yayati came along and found her in the well and threw some clothes to her, of course, and took her out of the well. And Devayani fell in love with Yayati. But marriage between Brahmins, lady, and a Kshatriya man is not considered very auspicious. Later on, somehow or another, it was arranged that she married him anyhow. And after marrying him, she demanded that Devayani, or Sarvamista, became her servant, or else to the king, Vishvaparva. And so Vishvaparva couldn't deny a request by Sukracharya, because otherwise Sukracharya was so powerful he can curse him. So Sarvamista became a servant with all her followers of Devayani. And when Devayani went to the king, was married to the king, then also Sarvamista came along with all her followers, and she was Yayati was warned that don't allow Sarvamista to approach him. Anyhow, to put a long story short, he did allow it. He got cursed to become old and invalid, so he couldn't enjoy anymore. And later on, of course, he gave his invalidity to Puru, and he was able to enjoy. But at the end of life, he realized, we've been enjoying, he told Devayani, that you and me have been enjoying for thousands of years, sense pleasure. And I'm still as lusty as I was when I started. I'm still as unsatisfied. So I don't think I'm ever going to be satisfied if we follow this direction, this method. I think I'll just get my old age back. So that's what he did. He got his old age back from Puru, and then he retired, became self-realized. And so did Devayani. So the point is that at least they're a case in point. You could live in heaven. He can be the daughter of Sukracharya, who is in charge of sex in the material world, practically speaking. You can enjoy it for thousands of years, and you wind up at the same place you did when you started. And what's the proof? That at least most of us have been here since time immemorial. Everyone in the material world has been around since time immemorial, enjoying sex life since time immemorial in 8,400,000 species of life, and people are still lusty. As a matter of fact, in Kali Yuga, they're lustier than they were when they started the material creation. Now they're having sex with anything. It used to be man and woman, now it's man and man, woman and woman, animal, children, dead bodies, anything. That there's no way of becoming satisfied. Because the living entity, the soul, is not meant for self-satisfaction. Through his material senses, he's meant, which is the only way he could try to satisfy himself, he can merge into Brahman and just exist there and try to, you know, I'm sure it's nice and warm there because the sunlight of Brahman. But after a while, you get tired of the same weather eternally. You wonder what it would be like maybe if you cooled down a little bit here. There's nothing, but you're blissful, there's no anxiety. You're not worried about dying because there's no place to die in the Brahman. Everyone there is eternal. But there's nothing going on. And that's the highest state of self-satisfaction. And what to speak of the material world, trying to satisfy the senses, which are never satisfied. Or as Krishna says, that Dumena Vriyate Vanir, Itar Darsho Malena Cha, Itab Garvena Tasta Tarka. Let's start off. Dumena Vriyate Vanir, Itar Darsho Malena Cha, Itar Gainarvias Tar, how does that go? Garvain Vias. As the fire is covered by dust, as the mirror is covered by smoke, as the fire is covered by smoke, as the mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, so the living entity is covered by his different degrees of lust. Itol bin avrita garavastata te nevam avritam gyan etena gyanino nitidvarina kamarupena kuntia dusprena anlena cha. Thus the man's pure consciousness is covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. So that's what Krishna's statement is. Lust is never satisfied, and it burns like fire. So we try to, that's what Prabhupada's talking about, our so-called self-interest. When we want to gratify our senses, in order to do so, we need a certain amount of economic development to do it. So we can just survive. So that's called fruitive activities. One is working to make the arrangements for one's personal sense gratification. Or other sense gratification. But no matter what the arrangement is, even we make the arrangement in the kingdom of heaven, then for our interests, so we can be happy there. But the only pleasure, the ultimate pleasure available there is ultimately sense gratification, as available here, but to a higher degree. But even in heavenly planets, trying to enjoy sense gratification doesn't satisfy the soul. There is also the same principle of lust and dissatisfaction. But if we try to gratify Krishna's senses and we become Krishna conscious by doing so, then it says anandam buddhivardhanam. Then we enjoy unlimited happiness which goes on forever. Therefore, Maharaj Vrishabhde says, nanya deho deha bhajam riloke kastan kaman arhate vidbhujanye Tipo divyam putraka yena sadvam shudyat tasmat brahma sokyam tvanantam. That we're actually interested in our real interest and our real satisfaction. We want unlimited happiness. We want our absolute self-interest. And that's brahma sokyam, which goes on, spiritual happiness, which goes on forever. So we're actually very self-interested, but we have to know what our real interest is. That is, the real interest is to have no interest except for Krishna's interest. That's our real interest. Our interest is Krishna's satisfaction, because the happier Krishna is, the happier we and everyone else becomes. And if we don't try to satisfy Krishna's interest, it's just like watering the leaves and branches, but to no avail, because only when the root is watered is actually any part of the tree actually benefited. So even real sannyas is to work for Krishna's interest. And renouncing the material world, sense gratification, is also kind of sannyas, but it's not positive. That the real sannyasi, the ultimate sannyasi, is, as we'll explain in another verse, is to work for Krishna's interest. anasaktasya vishayan itahu upayumbhijitaha nirabandha krishna sambande yukta vairagyam uchite. That is, giving up the material world is not considered with real renunciation, anasaktasya vishayan. Renouncing sense gratification of the objects of the senses is imperfect renunciation. Real renunciation is to utilize everything in Krishna's service. Prapanchi katya budhya hari sambandhi vasuna prityago, what is that? Prityago vairagya palu katyate. Palgu vairagya uchite. That to give up the things of the material world without understanding their connection with Krishna is called palgu vairagya. False renunciation. Just like there's a river that runs in India underneath the ground. So you don't see it. So you think there's no river there. But actually there is a river. But you just don't recognize it because it's just a little bit underneath the ground. But if you stick your hand in the ground, then you can feel the river flowing. So that's called Palgu Vairagya. Palgu. The river is named Palgu. We think it's renunciation, but actually it's Palgu Vairagya. It's false. Because actually everything, we can't renounce something that we don't own. If you go to the bank and you renounce all the money in the, whatever the bank, Gorensky Bank, and you say you can have all the money back. Well, they won't be impressed because you never had the money in the first place. So similarly, if you renounce the material world, since it doesn't belong to us, it has no meaning. When it's utilized in Krishna's service, then it actually has some meaning. That's real renunciation. But the renunciation is really the renunciation of the material concepts of life. That's all. That's all we're trying. That's all we can renounce is our false conceptions that we are here to enjoy ourselves. And that we can be happy by some or another manipulating the material energy for our enjoyment. Surely we should find out how to manipulate the energy for Krishna's enjoyment. And then we'll actually become happy. So I'll stop there. Any questions, comments?
Hare Krishna. You brought up the story of Yayati and Sharmishta and Devayani, and the whole ninth canto sounds quite dodgy in that regard. There's a lot of scandals listed in canto 9.
Yes.
So how do we explain so many scandals in?
Well, you need a little spice to get people to read the book. The whole point of the Bhagavatam is to convince us to renounce the material world. Now here we have in the cantos many different descriptions of life in other planets, of the demigods, you know. But mostly it's stories of Kapila Muni, Sankhya philosophy, and then we have stories in the fifth canto of not only the description of the universe, but we have Bharat Maharaj renouncing things and all different stories. And then we have in the sixth canto, we have the demigods fighting the demons and the glories of the holy name. And the seventh canto, we have Prahlad Maharaj, especially the story which we're reading now, and the description of Anashram at the end. And the eighth canto, we have, again, stories of the demigods fighting, etc., the problems in the universe. So the idea is that we actually believe, as Prabhupada once said, one of the problems in our movement is that the devotees, well, he said one time, the devotees don't believe in Krishna, which is a problem. You join the Hare Krishna movement, you don't believe in the leader. It becomes a problem. The second is that many of my disciples want to go to the heavenly planets. Because we think, you know, all right, I can't enjoy here. You know, I got to work here, and you know, relationships don't work out so well here, especially in Kali Yuga. So maybe if I go to the heavenly planets, you know, there's the Nandakanda and the forest, and there's a lot of apsaras there, and you know, they know how to treat people. So maybe if I went there, I'd get a good deal. You know, I could find my soulmate, someone, you know, who'd do my laundry every day and cook for me, and you know, I wouldn't have to work so hard because I'd be a demigod. So yeah, I wouldn't even have, so one thing's like that. But then the ninth canto is part of the eighth canto, I believe, also. I meant to discourage us that there's so many problems in the heavenly planets. It's not a, you know, just a breeze. You go there and you enjoy. You may be called up by Indra to fight against someone like Vritrasura and get stomped to death. You're only there. I just got here, you know. They just put a sword in my hand. I got it. You know, this guy is big as the Himalayas. I got to go out and fight him. And the first thing you know, you're back in the earth again. You get that stomped. How long was I, you know, I worked for 100 years to get here. It took me 5 seconds. Oh, you were there for 300,000 years of the demigods. It just seemed like a second. So just to discourage us from, you know, thinking that there's something missing. I'm missing something. All right, this world is not very pleasant. You know, Kali Yuga's coming up. We're in Kali Yuga. So many problems, you know, whoever I become. But, you know, there's some love in the material world, maybe somewhere on the heavenly planets. There's someone who can appreciate me. So this is just putting an end to that, so that when we enter the 10th canto, we don't look back and think, well, maybe I'm missing something. And then again, at the end of the 9th canto, Devayani's in the 9th canto? Yeah. At the end of it, then there has to be some continuum. So we were introduced to the dynasty in the 10th canto, how Krishna appears. So there's a whole list of kings of the dynasty, so we can get up to Krishna. So there's some continuum. It doesn't seem that Krishna just popped out of nowhere. That there's a whole, everything's connected. And if you can get through the 9th canto, read all those names of the kings, you're certainly eligible to get into the 10th canto. Anyone who can go through all that, not fall asleep. But the other thing is that if we could actually understand who these personalities were, you know, we'd be quite impressed if we actually had an idea of some of these great personalities that are listed, that to us are just another name. You know, you have people listed in the 9th canto with 8 mystic powers, others had, you know, 10,000 wives, and other, you know, so many different things were going on there that when they were here on this planet, I mean, everyone knew about them. They were the talk of the day, and now they're just another name in the Bhagavatam. But at least they got into the Bhagavatam. I don't think any president of the United States is going to make it into the Bhagavatam. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.